Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you look for it, every day has cause for celebration. Celebrate a friend for their promotion, baby, wedding, life thing. Celebrate yourself for keeping the couch warm. It's no easy feat, especially if it's a big couch. Or maybe you just want to celebrate living in 2023, where you can get beer, wine, and spirits delivered from Drizly in under 60 minutes without leaving said couch. So download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com and get your favorite drinks delivered today.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro.
Oh, yeah. Time right now to have some fun with your boys, the Decibel Geek Podcast. You know us, Aaron Camaro. That's me. And I'm always joined by my awesome friend, Chris Sinzak. Christmas is come and gone. It was all right. You know, we had family over and everything, which was cool. Very awesome. I got a bunch of kick-ass CDs for Christmas that I wanted. Finished off my Ramones collection, my Accept collection, and my Sabbath collection this Christmas. It was all good, except for the kid caught COVID. And for the first time in 22 years, I couldn't have my son around for Christmas.
Yeah, we had some family members, my brother's family, pretty much the whole house got wound up with COVID, so we couldn't join them, but went over to my mom's and just had a nice low-key Christmas. And but yeah, it was a good day, nice to relax and kick back, watch some football, and mostly enjoyed my time off from work.
Yep, same here. Enjoyed that football, too. Every team the Packers needed to lose, lost, and the Packers won. Go Pack, go. Playoffs are still a possibility. That's all I really wanted for Christmas was the Packers to beat the Dolphins, and they did.
I picked that game too. I picked them to beat them.
Yeah. Well, now they got Minnesota this week, but this is not a football podcast. This is a podcast about hard rock and heavy metal music. We've been doing it for about 12 years now, creeping up on it. Having a good time all these years, making all kinds of awesome friends all over the world, talking about our favorite thing on earth, hard rock, heavy metal music. That's what it's all about. Last week, we had a blast. We started a project, a two-week, two-parter, because you couldn't break it all down into one. The best and the worst of Metallica. Last week, we had our good friend Metal Mike Tyler on here with us, and we went through the first part. Part one, the best and worst Metallica, from Kill 'Em all the way up through the Black Album. And man, what a fun time that was. We're all rejoicing. This was great. Everybody loved it. So much fun. That was great. And then we remembered we have to do part two.
Dun, dun, dun.
And it got deathly silent. You know, they're like, oh, shit, Lulu, all that. Oh, no. But today, Chris Sinzak and myself, along with our awesome friend Josh Toomey, are going to dive in to part two of Metallica, the best and the worst, starting with Load and going all the way up to today. But before we get to all that, you know us. We got to take care of our business. And yeah, I don't think there's any reviews again. I don't see any.
Nope.
Oh, man. I was hoping it was a typo. Nope, no reviews or recommendations. What, you guys don't love Metallica? You don't love dudes talking about Metallica? Go to Podchaser. You can give us a review on just that episode that we did last week. Or you can go to Apple, or you can go to Facebook and leave recommendations. We really love them a lot. It's been a long time since we've gotten any. It's the Christmas season, for crying out loud. Give us a review or recommendation, please. Or we're just going to start doing best and worst of Madonna and the best and worst of U2 and the best and worst of REM. Is that what you want? You better give us some reviews.
Now we have to threaten people to get reviews.
Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. We need them bad. You know, when you're down in the dumps because you ain't got no reviews or recommendations, you need something to bring you up. And there's only one group of people that do it for us the way we need it. They take episodes that we create. They see when it's released on their favorite social media platforms. They go, I want to share that with my friends on Facebook. I want to retweet that to my tweeters on the Twitter. And they do that. And when that happens, we get the list. Oh, it's prestigious and beautiful. A list of people that help us spread the word about what we're doing here at Decibel Geek Podcast. And those people become our honorary Geeks of the Week.
Geeks of the Week this week are Adam Cox, Rock and Ron Runyon, Kristen Schimbeck, Sean McGinty, Darren Parkin, James West, Mark Starsky, Jason Warden, David Tyler, Craig Turtich, Samuel Wetz, John Phillips, Shane Hebert, Mike Tyler, Mike Parnell, Brent Tibbetts, Keith Rockford, Warren Edward, LaRue Baker, Shea Hargett, David Glenn, Aaron Baker, Kevin Williams, Matt Ashcraft, Jeremy Bednarski, Simon Catt, Todd Cunningham, Patrick Breen, Pete Adams, In Obscuria Podcast, Sit and Spend with Joe, Pantheon Podcast, Chuck G, 8 Ball, Jeffrey Mendenhall, Mark Auden Taylor, Freeform Rock Podcast, Mark and Jerry BS Session, David Cathy, Will Honeycutt, Joseph Capone, Victor Ruiz, Sean Geek and Fast Fret Podcast, Tony Smith, Ernesto Aguiar, Tom Cullen, Focus on Metal Podcast, Kevin's on Fire, Håkon Bergstad, Eladio, Vet Halen, Whiting Guitar Works, Jay Shablewski, Sean Cullen, Scott Crouch, and as always, the Mooger Fooger.
Mooger Fooger sent me an awesome Christmas present. It's this sweet beer glass, and it's got a cheese head metal thing etched right into the side of it. It's freaking awesome. Next time we do a Friday Night Live, I'm going to break that thing out and show it to you and show you all the awesome stuff I got for Christmas, because I know you got some cool stuff to show off too.
Mooger Fooger sent me a nice Christmas card.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good guy. Love that dude. Love all of our Geeks of the Week. Thank you guys very much for helping us spread the word. We're just here rocking and rolling. A couple of dudes talking about what we love. We need some reviews and recommendations. You've been warned. Well, here we are. We had all so much fun last week. Just living it up in the days of Kill 'Em All. Reveling in the days of Master of Puppets. Remembering the times from the Black Album. So fun. Carefree. What a beautiful thing it was last week. But now it's time to pay for our fun. Get right to it. We got an awesome friend with us this week. We said earlier, Josh Toomey from the Talk To Me podcast with Chris Aiken and, of course, from Knotfest. Everybody loves Josh Toomey, but remember, we were his first podcast friends, and so he continues on with us always. Love Josh Toomey. Are you guys ready? Because I'm ready. Chris, are you ready?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
All right, I guess then. Let's do it. Best and worst of Metallica. Part 2.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh.
All right, so when we last left off, our heroes were on top of the world. Just released their greatest selling album of all time. They're getting airplay. They're on MTV every 10 minutes. Metallica is on top of the world. Everybody loves them. The old school fans are starting to have funny feelings about Metallica and their direction around the time of the Black Album, saying they're selling out. Songs like Unforgiven and Nothing Else Matters has the original Metallica fans a little bit worried. But Metallica still has an album full of heavy stuff. Now they go on the massive tour, and that brings us back to 1996, many years later. And Metallica is back. But for the old school fans that had some trepidation with the Black Album, well, they've got a whole new problem when it comes to Load.
Where were you as a Metallica fan coming off of the Black Album? Well, like, were you already a diehard and excited for Load when it came out?
I was actually thinking about this today, and thank you guys for having me. And as always, love to see you two fellas on my screen here. The Black Album made me a giant diehard Metallica fan, had posters all over the walls, wore Metallica shirts every day to school, and just was just immersed in Metallica. You know, the first band I played in, all we did was Metallica covers. And, you know, I bought a bass because of Jason Newsted and Cliff Burton. Like, I was everything that I am today is because of Metallica from this time period. Now, that being said, by the time Load comes around, I've moved on. Like, I got into Korn and Deftones and just, you know, kind of going in that direction and even heavier stuff. You know, I got into like Deicide and Obituary too. So I was like, Metallica was definitely my gateway into all of this world. But by the time Load came out, I was kind of moved on mentally. And then, then the album cover and the logo change and, you know, the Ain't My Bitches of the world start popping up. And I just was not, I was not feeling this one.
Wow. See, and I thought we chose you for this part of the whole discussion because this is what you thought was the golden era of Metallica. I thought that was the idea.
Well, like your musical taste, you know, that's wrong too.
So. Oh, shots fired early in this one.
Oh, fuck you, Toomey.
Love you, Aaron. Love you too.
I love you too, man. I know for me, same thing. You know, I didn't really have too much of a problem with the Black Album. Again, there was the two songs I didn't really like that much, but they were still, to me, a heavy metal band. By the time 96 rolls around, you know, the news and the magazines and stuff, oh, Metallica cut their hair. And you got to think, you know, you got to remember, if you were there in that time period, that was actually a pretty damn big deal because up until that point, most hard rockers all were long-haired rock and roll dudes. And it was kind of a badge of honor that you wore as a rocker, having long hair. And then when Metallica cut their hair, a lot of people that were already upset with the Black Album saw that happen and were like, man, what a bunch of sellouts. These guys are no good anymore. And then the video for Until It Sleeps, you know, and they're wearing makeup and it's just so un-Metallica like everything about it. Like Kirk Hammett looks like Carlos Santana. And it's just like, what the hell happened to Metallica? But I mean, as a huge Metallica fan all them years, I thought, okay, that's pretty weird. But when Load came out, I bought it on the first day because it's still Metallica.
I remember a lot of, because like, you know, I liked Metallica. I wasn't like a diehard fan at the time, but I remember when Black came out and everyone was, a lot of the diehard fans, I think maybe they were fooling themselves, but a lot of them were saying, okay, they've tasted the brass ring. They've gotten the radio play. Now they're going to go back to the old stuff. I remember a lot of people expecting them to, you know, just go right back to Master of Puppets type of sound. And that was definitely not the case. And I think Metal Edge put out a magazine with them on the cover. And it was, if I'm remembering right, it was before the Until It Sleeps video came out. And it was showing the haircuts and the makeup and everything. And it was like, you know, Metallica with a new look or something. And I was like, that's kind of weird. And then when the video came out, I remember, oh, the outcry of fans were just, was unreal and people were pissed. But, and we'll get into this as we go, but the crazy thing about Metallica and our, you know, our friend Metal Mike, who was on last week, he pointed out pretty correctly that they kind of did try to roll with trends at the time and they succeeded. It was like, which is a rare thing for a band to do. Usually when bands try to follow trends, it's a death knell for them. But Metallica is the absolute exception to the rule. It was like no matter what they put out, which, of course, we'll get to something later that definitely didn't work. But in the 90s, they could do no wrong. They could have put out anything and it would have sold millions. It's just they were riding so high off the Black Album that I think Load, you know, we'll just get into it. You know, had a lot of hit singles. I mean, Until It Sleeps was a hit. Hero of the Day was a hit. King Nothing was a hit. You know, they were hit songs. They got played all over MTV. And I mean, you would have to call it a success because it was a commercial success. Now, as fans of the band, I don't think a lot of us like it. And I will say, going back and listening to Load, especially, the thing that surprised me was how much Reload sounded better to me in these days than Load did. But, the thing I get stuck on with both of those records is it's like they wanted to slow things down and they got into doing these kind of blues rock riffs rooted in the E note. And I know Toomey knows what I'm talking about. And it's like they got, it's like they found one riff to jam on. And like, those are all, if you're in a band, there's, you always find these little riffs that are fun to jam on and they're easy and you can just sit back, drink beer and jam on those riffs all night long. Well, they decided it'd be a great idea to put up records together with that riff. And it's just, God, so many times I'm listening to this record, I'm like, God damn, this riff again. And it's like, I don't know. There's just not a lot of originality in this album. It feels like they phoned this one into me. And I'm not a big fan of this record. It has not aged well to me. And picking a best and a worst, I hate to say it because I'm not even a fan of Ain't My Bitch. I don't think it's the greatest song in the world for sure because it's kind of cringy lyrically. But musically, I guess it's probably what I would consider the best song on here. And then picking a worse is kind of hard. I do like Hero of the Day. I actually think that's a good song. It's not, may not be the best Metallica song ever, but it's a well-written song and has good riffs and has good melody to it. But then the worst, I settled on Cure as the worst song on this record. It's just cringy as fuck in so many places and just not a fan of this one, but, yeah, there's not a whole lot I go back to on this record, and time has not helped it in my case.
I see what you're saying about this, because when I went back and I listened to it, I actually found that there was more songs on here that I thought were good than I remembered. And I haven't listened to it in a long time, but I think, and you nailed it on the head when you say the songs are good, but are they good Metallica songs? Doesn't sound a lot like Metallica at all to me. And at the time, it didn't sound like it. And I couldn't get into it. I mean, some songs I go back, I listen to, I like Poor Twisted Me, I think is pretty good. Hero of the Day, yeah, totally weird for Metallica. A great Foo Fighters song.
Yeah. Right.
But not for Metallica, even though it is still a good song. King Nothing is cool. Ain't My Bitch is a jamming tune. Until It Sleeps is weird. My favorite song on here is Wasting My Hate. I think it's got a cool jam to it. It's kind of got an awesome groove to it. I like the lyrics of it. Some catchy, cool, clever things going on in there. Another song I thought was kind of cool is a song called Ronnie. And it's so un-Metallica-like, but it sounds like an AC/DC song from that era. Mm. Like when I was listening back to that, I was like, I could hear Brian Johnson singing this song. Like, the way the riff is laid out, it sounds like a 90s era AC/DC song. As for my least favorite, oh man, it's easy to pick a few, but I don't like Outlaw Torn. I think that one's kind of lame, but I'm going to agree with Chris. I think the worst song on here is definitely Cure. It just sucks.
You know, listening to this album, it really made me hear like the parody of Metallica, you know, when you make fun of James Hetfield with the yeah and the chas, and like this is when he really just leaned into that kind of parody of himself. I know you guys do a lot of interviews, and I know that, you know, you'll interview a band that you kind of on the fence about, and then by the time you're done with the interview, and if it's a cool guy, you're like, I kind of like this band, you know, they're actually pretty good. You know, you kind of get a false sense of I like the guy, so I like the band. And I kind of think of that with a lot of these songs that I've just been beaten over the head with some of these singles on here over the years. I'm like, maybe this song isn't that bad. You know, you kind of get to that point with some of these songs. And going back to it, I mean, like Chris said earlier too, there are a ton of singles on this album. Like it kind of blew me away to see how much was actually on this album.
All the time.
Yeah, every time you turn around, you know, still on the radio. And so, but I did for my best, I did King Nothing. I just, you know, being a bass player and enjoying that bass line and all that good stuff. And I think it's just one of the better tracks on here. Again, I don't know if it's because it's good or it's because I've been beaten over the head with it because it's always on the radio. But I actually, I'm going to go against Chris on this, man. My least favorite on here is Ain't My Bitch. It was just such a, when you put this album on the first time back in like, what was this, 95, 96, and you hit play and you're waiting for, you know, even though I love the Black Album and Master Puppets and Justice, you're waiting for all this stuff and you get Ain't My Bitch, Cha, and all that stuff. I was just like, Jesus Christ, man. Out of my way. We cannot be going down this path. So yeah, my least favorite, and it is, it's not a bad, you know, musically it's not a bad song, I agree with Chris, but those lyrics and just everything about it just ruined it for me and put a bad taste in my mouth.
I will say, like, King Nothing, though, I like the song, I like the riff, but then when I was listening back to it, you know, obviously I hear it on the radio from time to time, but listening back to it, I'm listening to it and I'm like, well, it sounds like they turned Enter Sandman inside out and redid the riff. Right. And then at the end of the song, James goes, often, never, never. I'm like, well, he even knows they're ripping themselves off with this song.
Yeah.
So that's 96. And then 97, they come back with Reload in November of that year. You know, this was the one I kind of thought, I'm like, because I remember at the time a lot of the narrative was, well, Reload is just leftovers from Load and it's not as good. But then I start listening to it and I'm kind of like thinking, man, Reload is probably a better overall record, in my opinion, than Load is. I found better stuff on here. Not that a lot of it was great, but I don't know. There's several songs on here that I think are okay. But the bad is really bad. So maybe the bad being so bad is why people view it that way. Picking a best, I had to, you know, I'm going to kind of parrot Josh on this. I had to go with kind of the single. This was one where I think they did choose the right lead single with Fuel. I think, I know everybody's sick to death of that song, but as a song compared to the other songs on this record, I think it's a complete song. I like the harmony vocals with Newstead on the chorus. It's a decent song. I know James will run that song into the ground, especially in their live set, but it's a decent song. I don't mind it. And then for worst, God, I could have picked so many from this. I mean, I almost went with Carpe Diem, Baby. I think that's pretty awful. The Devil's Dance has great music and cringy fucking lyrics. I didn't like that. I didn't really like Unforgiven 2 very much. Fixer, I didn't like very much. But I went with Low Man's Lyric for my worst on this album. It just goes nowhere and it bores the shit out of me. My eyes seek reality.
Yep, that song is pretty, pretty bad.
I actually, when I was going through the album, and Low Man's Lyric was almost my worst, but it's also like, that seems like a song that James wants, like, that's what James wants to do, like, at this time. And so I almost attacked that one as being the worst, but I definitely kind of backed off of it because that just seems like at the heart of James, kind of seems like that's something he would want to do.
Yeah, James and Brett Michaels have something in common. They both really, really want to be old Southern black men, and it doesn't work.
Don't we all? Yeah. I'll go ahead and go on this one. Fuel, I think, is a, like, musically great song. Obviously, it does sound like a car just, you know, driving down the road. You know, they got the lyrics right on that one. the last time I saw them live, obviously, you know, the flame and the fire and everything else going on. I mean, it's a great live staple. I, you know, like you said, they will run it into the ground, but I do think it's a fun song to see live. I actually went with Devil's Dance as my best, just because of the musically, great track. And then, actually I like The Unforgiven too. You know, I like Black Album. I was listening to it again today and just hearing that kind of the remnants of The Unforgiven kind of going into it. And I don't think Unforgiven 2 is a terrible song, but my worst of, and that this is where when you talk about Reload being almost better than Load, I'm like, I don't know, man, this back half of this record is pretty trash. And like you said, Load Man's Lyric could have been it, but I gave it a pass. Carpe Diem Baby, that's just some of the worst lyrics possible. But I went with Prince Charming. I was pretty displeased with Prince Charming on this record. Sorry. And Prince Charming, and the main reason I went with Prince Charming because the chorus is just the Four Horsemen just played a little bit differently. And I'm like, you're just trying a little too hard or something. You're ripping yourself off, but you're not doing a proper job. You're
right on that, and the lyrics on that song are awful. And then if I had to pick a non-single to be my best, I would have gone with Bad Seed. That song's actually pretty good, I thought.
Not a big fan of that one either, man. When this came out, I mean, how can I put this as sarcastically as possible? I can't believe these songs were not good enough to make it on the Load. I mean, it's pretty bad. I mean, Fuel's cool. It's a hard rocking tune. I remember the video for The Memory Remains and having the old hippie lady at the end.
Right.
What is this? You know, what is this, Metallica? You got old grandmas singing on your songs now?
That was Mick Jagger's girlfriend back in the day.
He is old grandpa at that time, too.
Well, they do like to work with old grandmas and old grandpas. We'll get to that later.
Oh, God. We have to.
You know, it's funny, the listening back to Load and Reload the last few days, kind of getting ready for this. And for as massive of a Metallica fan that I was in 1991, 92, 93, even 94, like I said, walls covered in Metallica, played Metallica, just constantly, you know, watching Cliff of All and, you know, a day or a year and a half in the life of Metallica. Like, I was so embedded in Metallica. When I listen back to Load and Reload now, I don't remember half of these songs. Like, it's just crazy to think of like how quickly my fandom changed.
I don't want to remember half these songs. And when I listen back to it, I mean, most of it sucks. I think the best song, my favorite on here, is track 5, Better Than You. I think that's a good hard rocking tune. I like that one a lot. Said Fuel jams, Memory Remains is weird. I do like Devil's Dance. I think that one's good. Like, what do we get together and be like, hey, what's the song that really kicked it off for our hardcore fans to really start, you know, side eyeing us, wondering what the hell we're up to? Oh yeah, The Unforgiven. They hated that. Hey, here's what we should do. Let's do The Unforgiven Part 2, man. What an awesome idea. It sucks also. I don't care for it. The whole second half of the album sucks. The worst song, it could be Carpe Diem Baby. It could be Prince Charming. It could be Low Man's Lyric. I guess I'm going to go with Where the Wild Things Are because it sucks just as bad as the rest of them.
And Newstead got a co-writing credit on that one.
4 solid tracks on this album, if that.
Yeah, Slither's a rough one too, man. I hate you guys for making me listen to this.
But we had to listen to them too. But I mean, but I still go back to, it's just like they got stuck on this stupid blues rock riff idea. And it just, they kept recycling it through both records. And it's like, what are y'all doing? And they have not aged well. And it's funny, like anyone who has anything bad to say about Death Magnetic On, fuck you. Listen to these two records.
It is funny you were talking about kind of that riff, that jammy riff that they kind of keep going back to, and listening to these albums in a condensed form, you know, where I'm listening to them kind of back to back to back. It's funny that they're still kind of playing that riff still. Like, you know, it's on Saint Anger, it's on Death Magnetic, it's on Hardwired. It's like that riff is just still running wild in the streets of Metallica.
They got it, but they got better at it over the years.
Yeah, right.
It almost feels like Metallica got a taste of what it was like with the Black Album, you know, what it was like to be critically acclaimed, you know, to sell millions of albums, to be top of the charts, to be arguably the number one band in the world. And thought, you know, we were heavy thrash metal. And then we did some of the rock stuff and even threw in some ballady stuff. And it was worth a lot of money. Take it one step further. This is them trying to figure out where that happy medium is in between metal and pop rock, you know, stuff that's mass consumed. And they, and like Chris said, you know, they did it. They were still top of the game, had videos all over MTV. These songs were all over the radio. They're still all over the radio, the singles off these two albums. You can hear Fuel. You can hear Ain't My Bitch. You can hear any one of them. I heard Until It Sleeps on the way home. I was like, I didn't even need to listen to the CD. I could have just listened to the local rock station. It's amazing how much they changed, and how, even though they alienated a lot of their early hardcore fans, they were able to gain enough new fans to just carry them right on through.
Yeah.
Pretty wild. Pretty cool.
And even through all this time, I will say, anytime they came through town, I still went to see them. Like, I anytime Metallica has been in town, I was there, you know? So it's not like I completely turned my back on them. It was just, I just didn't get into Load and Reload.
But I mean, and their history and their catalog from the past, you know, they could sell out tours with no problem. And so it's almost like they got to the point where they're like, you know, we can put whatever out, just put the name Metallica on it. It's going to sell. It's going to be big. It's going to get radio play. And they proved it. But then, I mean, then we go to 1998 and they put out Garage Inc, you know, which is another collection of cover songs. I mean, Josh, you're definitely a little more well-read into Metallica and their history than we are. I mean, do you think this was because of the diehards complaining about the last two records? Why do you think they were motivated to do this album?
Honestly, I have no idea, but I'm glad they did, because this I go back to a lot. Like, I've said it a million times on my show, on any time talking about Metallica. Metallica is my favorite cover band. Like, they, you know, Garage Days, Garage Inc, anytime they do covers, you know, and this one has the collection of stuff that was B-sides and rarities on other stuff too. I just love when they do covers. So I will listen to this album, you know, every few months. I'll get into a Metallica cover, you know, a little period.
Yeah, I was working on radio when this came out, and it was a lifesaver, except that the only song they really wanted to play off of it was the Bob Seger cover over and over and over again. Like, I was working at the radio station, and I'm hearing this song like every 2 hours.
Right.
And it's, well, cool. Jeez, come on, give us a break. There's so much other cool stuff on here.
Well, that was also kind of the link between like me and my dad too, because my dad loved Bob Seger, loved Turn the Page. And you know, he, you know, I guess listened to a little bit of Metallica just because I was always around. But I'm like, Dad, they did, you know, Turn the Page. Check out how cool this is. You know, that was kind of the link between like his music and my music.
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff on here. I go through it. I'm just looking at like the new stuff at the time, because they have the Motorhead covers, four of them that were, I think, a B-side on Hero of the Day off of Load, which are awesome. I love those, every single one of them. I mean, just killer. But as far as like the main album of Garage Inc, I always love Sabra Cadabra.
Yeah.
Black Sabbath cover. I love what they did with it and how they did it. When we used to play Mandatory Metallica on Z104, that was one that actually I would play quite a bit because I just thought it was so cool at the time. For the worst, I'd say Tuesday's Gone, but that's like a live thing that they recorded in a studio somewhere in 97. But I'm going to go with Lover Man. Lover Man's kind of weird, man. Yeah. Kind of strange. Not real cool.
Yeah, that's a Nick Cave cover. And if you've ever seen a photo of Nick Cave, you'll say the same thing about him. He's a very strange looking person. But for me, I'm embarrassed to admit that because I'm a diehard Thin Lizzy fan now, but I wasn't at the time this came out. So this was other than, of course, you know, I mean, the boys are back in town. Obviously, that was ingrained in all of our DNA from when we were born. But Whiskey in the Jar was kind of my first real exposure other than that song to Thin Lizzy. And I do love that. I think it's cool that I like their version. A lot of Thin Lizzy fans hate Metallica's version of this song, by the way. They don't like it, but I do. I think it's cool what they did with it. I never need to hear the Bob Seger cover ever again. They do a good job on it, but God, the radio ruined that song for me. I like the Tuesday's Gone cover on it. And I'm not even a Blues Traveler fan, but I love John Popper's harmonica playing on that cover. I think it's pretty great. I had a lot of choices on what I think my favorite was. I love Die, Die, My Darling. I'm not even a Misfits fan, but I love their version of that song. I love Sabracadabra, like Aaron said. I think that's a great cover. But for me, I don't know. My favorite one on this album, I went with It's Electric. I think that's my favorite thing on here. I like that one a lot, but it was hard to pick one. But for worst, I went with Free Speech for the Dumb, which is a Discharge cover. And I listened to the original today just to see, like, well, maybe there's something I'm missing here. No, it's just not a good song, no matter who does it. I just don't like it. But no, I go back to this one a lot more than I do the 598 EP Garage Days album. I think this has cooler stuff on here. I love Astronomy. But yeah, I think it's a cool collection. And I do. I'm like Toomey. I go back to this one probably every few months and listen. I love their covers. Like Anthrax, they're a great cover band.
Right. Yeah, because once you get deep in here, you know, you've got, Killing Time and Stone Cold Crazy and obviously So What and The Prince and Bread Fan. I mean, the whole back half of this is the goods. When I was looking for, I'll go my worst first is obviously free Speech for the Dumb. I did not go back to listen to the original on this one. It's just a tough cover for me. And then my favorites, and I will disagree with you guys on your picks from Garage Days in the past, man. Those Misfits covers are where it is at. So I will go with Die Die My Darling as my favorite on this. I did listen to it, you know, all the way through today just because I had to take a break because of Saint Anger and Reload and Lulu. I was like, I'm just going to like cleanse the palate. But I was listening to The Prince, and The Prince was obviously recorded during the Justice era. And there's bass on that. Like, there's really, you know, well listened bass. Like, you can hear the bass on The Prince. So I think if people were going to dive in and kind of wonder what Justice could have sounded like, I think if you check out The Prince, I think you might get a little bit of an idea of what it would have sounded like.
Yeah, I love all that old stuff. And it was nice to finally have it all in one collection. Garage Incorporated, thumbs up. Love that one.
Absolutely.
And Aaron put together this cool list of stuff that came out during this time. So, yeah, we're hitting the main releases, but I also don't want to forget that there were some singles and little offshoot songs that got released during these times. And I want to pay credit to them. So the Mission Impossible 2 soundtrack, I think. They did I Disappear, And I remember this was the early days of file sharing. And I remember this song got leaked ahead of the movie and the single release. And that was part of what kicked off the Napster controversy. I remember when this song got leaked on the internet. And I remember being excited to listen to it. And then I'm like, it's okay. And then radio kind of ruined it with I Disappear. But I don't know. Do you guys like that song?
I do. I think it's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah, that was the one in this time period where I was like, I dig it. And a cool video, too. Like, I really enjoyed the video. And they've went on record many a time talking about how they could have died making that video over and over. But, yeah, man, a great song, great track. I dug it. And I definitely, the radio definitely wore it out that summer or whenever it came out. But I definitely remember it.
It gave me hope for the future of Metallica at that point. Like, maybe things are going to start getting heavier again.
Well, and Aaron, you put something on this list that I had no idea ever got released. So in 2002, they do like a rap song with Ja Rule
and Swizz Beatz.
What the hell is this?
Know about this song?
I did not until I saw the list and I was making sure I covered all my bases and I went back and listened to this pile of trash.
I didn't know nothing about it either when I was putting the list together. I was like, we did it again with Ja Rule and what? I never heard this. I don't remember this coming out. I go back and I listen to it. I thought, this ain't too bad.
No, it's bad. Like, it's real bad. It's just, it's very discombobulated. Like, it's one of those like rap rock things where I don't think they were anywhere near each other, and like the rappers did the verses and then Metallica does the choruses, and it's almost like in different tempos or feels like. I'm just like, Jesus, this is a mess.
I think Metallica's production team just supplied the rappers with some raw tapes of shit that they did and said, do whatever you want with it, because it doesn't sound cohesive at all.
This was an extra song off Reload we just had laying around here. You can use this.
And if it didn't make Reload, then you know how good it was.
God, what gets rejected for Reload? That's pretty bad.
the C-list songs from Load that couldn't Reload.
But yeah, I did a little research on that song, and in the article I read, apparently, one of the favorite soundtracks among a lot of, especially fans of nu metal, was the Judgment Night soundtrack that came out back in the day. And apparently they did approach Metallica to do a song on the Judgment Night soundtrack, but Metallica turned them down. I wonder what that would have sounded like if they had done it.
Oh, wow.
Sounded something like this.
Yeah, maybe it was a good thing.
Well, if it sounded like this, then I'm glad they turned it down. But yeah, I love the Judgment Night soundtrack.
Me too.
Well, yeah, that's a classic soundtrack. And then, also on here is 53rd and 3rd, which was part of the We're a Happy Family Ramones soundtrack or tribute album, I should say. I like this cover. I've liked it since they've done it. And I did love the fact that if you want to hear Lars Ulrich sing, listen to this cover, because he does do the Dee Dee part on this song. I'm on 53rd and 3rd. I'm trying to turn a trick again.
Also, that's Laura. I was actually going to ask who that was, because I was like, is that Jay? I didn't know if it was Jason, because Jason always did the kind of the backup stuff with it. So that's Lars.
Lars. Wow. Lars could have sang for a punk band.
And also, if you want to hear Lars actually play drums that sound good in 2003, that's the song.
Yeah, because this was during the time that they were making Saint Anger, which we'll talk about next, right?
How is it the drums sound so awesome on 53rd and 3rd, but then Saint Anger? I don't understand it.
And I was thinking about this, guys. This is the second time you guys have made me listen to this album, because back in the day, I did the Metallica discography with you guys, and I had to like listen to the album back then, and I probably haven't listened to Stained Anger since then. And you guys are like, let's do a best and worst of Metallica. And I'm like, God damn it, Decibel Geek.
Well, so when we decide to do the best, the metal albums of 2003, we'll have you back on and do it again.
I can't wait.
I was in a lot of high hopes for the Saint Anger album in 2003. I mean, they just did the Garage Inc. that had a lot of really hard thrash and Metallica sounding stuff on it. They did the I Disappear song in 2000, which was pretty killer. 53rd and 3rd on the tribute to the Ramones, kick ass. I'm feeling good about Metallica. 2003, Saint Anger. The artwork looks really cool on the album. This is going to be kick ass. Tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink. And it's like the first song, Frantic, right off the bat. It's like you can tell there's something wrong. Like I'm not, even in 2003, before doing Decibel Geek, when I really started like fine-tuning what I looked at as far as what makes an album, you know, what's it take to make this sound good? What's it take, you know, we're talking to guys like Michael Wagner and seeing it from their point of view of, you know, what makes an album sonically pleasing besides the musicians and those vocalists and like the technical part of it. First time I listened to this, man, I thought there was something wrong with it. Like I got a default CD or something that was not good. You know, like I need to return this and get a different one. But then you listen to the whole thing and it's all like that. And God, man, this is... Boy, if it wasn't for Lulu, this is the worst thing that Metallica's ever, ever done. To go back and listen to it, I mean, I listened to it when it was new, like once, and was like, I don't never need to hear this again. There's nothing on here I like. So the best on Saint Anger, none of it. Not a fucking...
I almost went with that, by the way.
And as far as worst, I mean, if Saint Anger is Metallica's Music from the Elder, then the Invisible Kid is too young to be sailing.
Oh, really?
That song is freaking awful. Awful on an album full of garbage.
Invisible Kid, never see what he did. Got stuck where he hid, falling through the grid. Invisible Kid, got a place of his own, where he'll never be known. In a word, he's grown. Invisible Kid, never see what he did.
I don't even know if that's the worst song. I mean, I listened through it twice, and I really couldn't decipher any song from the other. It all tinka 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 down down, and even the guitars. Everybody bitches about the drums, but the guitars suck on this album too. They're down in the mix. It's like James is real loud and everything else is just muffled, and it's just terrible. I don't like it. Not a single song on it.
I'm gonna say
artwork's...
Yeah, the artwork's cool, but I remember when this was being hyped up. I remember because they did do a lot of advertising for this ahead of time, and I remember being kind of excited for it, like Aaron was, and then they put out the title track as the single, and I was just like, oh fuck, what's going on here? And then I did buy the record. I don't think I bought it on release day. I think I bought it like a week later. But and then listening to it. Obviously the drum sound is so just jarring that you can't get into much of it because it just takes you out of a lot of the songs. And my overall opinion of this album is there's a lot of great ideas on this record. There's just not a lot of great songs. I think there's a lot of pieces of what could become great songs, but they didn't finish them. And obviously if you saw the Some Kind of Monster documentary, I mean, you see why they were not in any position to be making a record at that time. I mean, with James going through rehab, him and Lars going through all their issues, you know, on a personal level, they've got a therapist in the middle of everything. It's kind of a miracle they put a record out at all at this time, to be honest. But, you know, like with Kiss with the Elder, maybe it's one of those things where, you know, you don't get what you have now without this album coming out. So I got a little bit more respect for this record when I did see the documentary, because it's like, well, at least they put something out. But I don't know, man. There's riffs here and there that could turn into something great, but they couldn't finish them. Like the main riff in Some Kind of Monster, it's a great riff. It just never goes anywhere. Frantic could have been a great song. It just doesn't get finished. But the one that I picked as my favorite is the song My World. My World has like pieces of three songs that could be great songs. It's just still not a great song by itself. But there's great stuff like, you know, something like God, Why Does It Always Rain on Me? Like, that's a great lyric. Some of the riffs in that song are fucking great. It's just not a great complete song. And then as far as worst, I picked a tie. The last two songs on this record are god awful. Purify and All Within My Hands. And I don't know which one I hate more, but the fact that they named their charity foundation after one of the songs, I guess you made something good out of that title. But goddamn, the last two songs on this record are just horrible. And some of these records, as I go through them, I'm like, man, if this wasn't Metallica, they would be getting, you know, raked over the coals a lot more by people. I almost think they get a pass for some of this stuff. But Invisible Kid, there's some good riffs there, but the lyrics are fucking awful. There's just a lot of bad stuff on this record. But at the same time, I'll give them more of an E for effort, because I think this album is way more creative than Load and Reload. At least they're giving it a shot. They're not getting stuck on a main riff and just running with it through the whole time. But it's a E for effort, but it's an F for execution for me.
Again, when they were hyping up this album, they go to, you know, they did the thing at the prison, you know, that was, I believe it was the same prison that Johnny Cash did some stuff, obviously a huge Johnny Cash fan. So I'm like, cool, this is another tie with like kind of the past and the present. You know, they're kind of looking badass at the prison doing the stuff. And then you hear the songs, and I echo Chris once again, you know, there's tons of great riffs on this album, but there's just no, there's nothing cohesive about it. And obviously that snare will just get you every time. Some of the lyrics, I'm madly in anger with you. I'm like, do I like that? Do I not like it? You know, and the whole, like, you know, my death style or my lifestyle determines my death style. And I'm like, I kind of dig that. I don't know, but I was really trying to find some silver linings in this album. There's not a lot here. I'll go with my worst first is Invisible Kid. That's rough. And then even some of the stuff in like Frantic, you know, with the tick, tick, tick tock. And he kind of channels his inner like Jonathan Davis, and his voice is cracking and all that nonsense too. And I'm like, what? That's not James Hetfield. That's, you know, that's the new metal that's going on around the time. Like he's kind of doing the whole, you know, genre, you know, chasing kind of stuff. I picked Dirty Window as my favorite on this. I think that was a cohesive song, and it's kind of driving. And if you're going to hit me with that snare, at least, you know, make it sound good, and you know, make it pounding. And I went with Dirty Window as my favorite on this.
Some of these songs might have some potential if they were done correctly. And God, the drums, so terrible. But even like Saint Anger, it starts out and it's like, oh, this is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. And then it just drops off to the Saint Anger. You know, it's like you were on to something good, and then you just dropped it off into this like terrible part. And then you try to bring it back, and there's, like Chris said, too much of that going on, where it's like three completely different songs all mashed in one, but none of the songs are very good. But this by itself might be okay, and that by itself might be okay, but mashed together, it just don't work.
Yeah, well, like part of I've watched Some Kind of Monster, I don't know, probably 100 times, just because it's fascinating to see a band behind the scenes like that.
Yeah.
And there's one part that kind of sums up this record where, and you'll notice when you listen to the record, Lars is doing all kinds of weird shit on the drums. And like they're showing them recording, and like James is at one point is like, could you do more like a regular beat here instead of what you're doing? And Lars is like, well, I'm just trying to make it more interesting. And I, over the years, when I listen back in hindsight, I'm kind of on Lars's side, because it's like, well, if you're not bringing any decent ideas to the table guitar wise, I have to do something to make it sound interesting drum wise. But it's just a matter of, they had too much going on in their personal lives to make a record and really buckle down and focus. So I think they were, it sounds like a band searching for something and they can't find it when I listen to it.
Sounds like Lars looking at James going, you're not going to ruin this album. I'm going to ruin this album.
And then there was a great meet and greet video of Lars. I don't know if you guys have seen it, where somebody gives him a snare drum to sign, and they brought up Saint Anger, and Lars looks at him and he goes, yeah, so this is Metallica before Saint Anger. And he locks the snare and he unlocks it and he goes, that's Metallica on Saint Anger. It's basically a snare with not locked in.
What's crazy too, and the Some Kind of Monster documentary, is for somebody that worshipped early Metallica and Cliff Amahl, and you know, like I said, even a year and a half watching those guys just be all metal all the time. And then Some Kind of Monster, they've got the therapist in there, they've got Dave Mustaine in there, everybody's crying. Lars is at an auction at one point, drinking wine, selling his paintings for like $5 million a piece or something like that. And you're just like that, this is the album that guys that are drinking wine, selling their art at auction makes.
Yeah. You
know, like they have no clue what's going on in the underground.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. What's there to be angry about when you're a millionaire?
How much your paintings sell for at the auction. Yeah,
and the paintings looked like shit too. If I'm not an art critic.
Those are crazy.
But I'm like, looking at those paintings and going, sold for that much? Really? I'll never understand art. And then around this time, you know, so this is all 2003. We talked about 53rd and 3rd, but they did several Ramones covers at this time. Maybe they recorded a handful of these things and submitted it for the tribute album. That's what I'm assuming. But they did Commando, Cretan Hop, Now I Want to Sift Some Glue.
But them songs, the Ramones covers all have decent sounding drums on them.
Yeah. And I think, it sounds great to me. They had kind of mixed success as far as how they pulled off these songs. I thought Commando sounded great. I thought James sounded stupid on Cretan Hop. Now I Want to Sift Some Glue sounds great. And I don't think they sound good on We're a Happy Family, but a couple of those songs, they sound good. And I wouldn't mind hearing a whole record of Metallica Ramones covers.
I'd be down with that.
I always love a good Metallica cover.
And then something you put on the list that I didn't know they actually recorded a metal version of this was, you know, they come out to the Ecstasy of Gold on their live shows all the time, but I didn't know they actually recorded a metal version of that song.
Yeah, it came out in 2007. It's pretty cool. I like it. Just an instrumental, you know, like you said, what they use to introduce themselves on stage, and they find a way to take like an old country western movie theme and make it kind of metal. Pretty cool.
Good for them.
Then 2008 comes along, and as I said earlier, anyone who gives Metallica shit for Death Magnetic on and they love Load and Reload, I don't understand what's wrong with you. Death Magnetic and Hardwired sound like fucking Dark Side of the Moon compared to those records to me, at least as far as close to what you would want from a Metallica record. So Death Magnetic comes out September 2008. I was working for a newspaper company at the time, delivering to gas stations and newspaper boxes when those existed at the time at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I blasted this record on repeat when it came out. And I still have a soft spot for this record. It's not them all the way back, but I do think it's a definite huge step in the right direction after Saint Anger. I think it's a pretty damn good record, and I think they get better after this, but I like this record quite a bit, and there's not a lot on this record that I think is awful. I think everything is good to great. I think most of this record is pretty solid. That Was Just Your Life, The End of the Line. Some of the songs are a little too long as far as what they do, but I think overall it's great music. Cyanide's great on this album. The Judas Kiss has a great hook on it. My Apocalypse is okay. I know it got a lot of Slayer compliments. A lot of people saying, oh, it's Metallica trying to do Slayer. But to me, the best song on this record to me was All Nightmare Long. A little cringy on the lyrics, but musically, I think it's a great song. And I know Robert was heavily involved in the writing of this song. Worst for me, it's, did we need a trilogy of The Unforgiven? I don't think so. I did not go with The Unforgiven 3. That's my worst song on this record.
Hey, remember when we alienated half of our fan base with The Unforgiven? And then a few years later, we came back and really fucked with them with The Unforgiven Part 2? I've got a great idea. The Unforgiven Part 3. What the fuck, man? Why? I don't understand.
Revenge of The Unforgiven.
They're never going to let us forget. But hey, this album, this I was super excited about. First off, the logo's back.
Absolutely.
That's a good sign right off the bat right there. As soon as I see that the old school Metallica logo is back, I feel real good about this coming out. And I get real excited about release day because all these years they've been doing all this other stuff using the different logos, differentiating away from the Metallica that's associated with that logo. And when that logo comes back, I feel like that means something. That means this new album is going to be killer. This is going to be a return to form, that the album I've been hoping for all these years since the Black Album, but haven't gotten. And man, when I got it, put it in the deck player in the car and rocked it out and loved it. And it was like, this is Metallica right here. This is the Metallica I love. Everything on this album is good, except for maybe The Unforgiven Part 3, easily the worst song on the album. It's got a big 10-minute instrumental on it I can live or die with. But I mean, to me, that one, Suicide and Redemption, sounds like it could have and should have had lyrics to it. Like, I don't know if they ran out of time or what. To me, the best song, it's tough to choose. I really like them all on here. I like Cyanide the best. Like Chris said, Judas Kiss is killer. End of the Line, All Nightmare Long. They kick it off with That Was Just Your Life is badass. This album is killer, man. Just killer. I love it.
So yeah, when Death Magnetic came out, I was working at a store and we sold CDs and we sold t-shirts. And like, this was like my favorite day I ever went to work. Like few days before this album came out, I opened the box up, you know, and I saw the CD, saw the logo was back. The album cover is great. And then we were already playing. I think we were already playing The Day That Never Comes. I think that was kind of the single before this album came out. And then my whole shift was, and the CD was $5. The shirt was $5, plain black shirt, just the Metallica logo. I was like a pig in shit, just selling the shit out of the CD. And we listened to that day at work was this CD just over and over and over. And like Aaron said, man, this is the first time since the Black Album that I was like Metallica is back. The logo's back. The songs are back. The songs are long, you know, reminiscent of Justice and just everything going on, man. And this one has a lot going on similar to Saint Anger, but this one is flushed out to where they know what they're doing. And there's a lot of parts going on, but they're all cohesive and all that. I did pick as my worst just because it's easy as Suicide and Redemption. Just, you know, I could do without that one. I picked The Day That Never Comes as my favorite just because of that the last like 3 minutes of that song is just a journey musically. It's like, you know, there's no lyrics. And I guess that kind of ruins my Suicide and Redemption, you know, take there. But just the last 3 minutes of The Day That Never Comes, man, it's just it's a damn musical journey that's just so good. Oh, it's great. Love it. Love this album. And I will say, I don't understand the Unforgiven 3. Honestly, I don't think it has anything to do with 1 and 2. Like, I was trying to find the through line. I guess I really need to dig into the lyrics and maybe and figure this one out. But at least the Unforgiven 2 kind of had a little bit of that Unforgiven 1 feel to it. The Unforgiven 3 is just a song with the title.
They're trolling you with it. I'm telling you.
Assholes.
All these years, the long game.
Well, at least they didn't put out, you know, Saint Anger Part 2.
Yeah.
And just when you think that Metallica is back and they can do no wrong.
Oh, here we go. All right. 2011 rolls around and Metallica, you know, after getting everyone back on their side, all diehards are starting to be like, oh, I'm warming back up to Metallica. That's good. I think things are looking up. Then they decide to put out a fucking concept album with Lou Reed on vocals. Why? I have no idea. And I don't think they did either. Called Lulu. Comes out on Halloween in 2011. And I will admit it's the scariest thing released that year. What the fuck? I mean, I don't even know what to say about this. I mean, it's, this might be the worst thing ever released by any artist. It could be the worst album ever created. I went back today. I've been listening to Load, Reload, Death Magnetic, all these things over the last week leading up to this, but I purposely waited till today to listen to Lulu because I couldn't stand the thought of listening to it. And I listened to it about 3 hours ago. And
and I'm still mad.
I'm still pissed. God damn, this is awful. Lou Reed sucks. He's overrated. I've never understood why anyone gave him praise. Yeah, Walk on the Wild Side's okay, but that's in spite of him. And Sweet Jane and Heroin are okay, but that's because of everyone around him, not because of him. And he ruined music from The Elder for Kiss. So that, what does that tell you? I don't understand why they wanted to work with Lou Reed other than they wanted to get in the good graces of the Rolling Stone magazine crowd. This is god awful. No one likes it. The funniest thing is it was the lowest selling Metallica record and the highest selling Lou Reed record, which I thought was funny.
Wow.
I did do some research on it, but no, it's not looked back upon well. I hate that I had to listen to it again today. But I did. And I could pick a best only because the riff on the song is good. Mistress Dread, the riff on the song is good. Sounds like a classic Metallica riff. Lou's vocals, and or if you want to call them vocals, god awful. And I'm going to take the easy way out for worst. Everything else. There's nothing good on this record. That one riff is the only redeeming part of this record. That's it.
I listened to part of Lulu back in 2011 and vowed to never listen to it again. So I must disqualify myself.
From this. You didn't even listen to it?
Nope, I took a ball
you
back.
You put it on the list.
You guys.
So I put myself through an hour listening to this bullshit and you didn't?
Took a ball. Very sick.
I was going off the list that you made, Camaro.
The list does not apply to me.
Oh.
But you love Lulu, don't you?
Well, just for that, I'm going to give you my best and worst. I gave Little Dog as my best just because it's the most, like, it's the closest to a song I think that's on here. And my worst was Pumping Blood just because it's insane. It's just, the whole album is insane, but Pumping Blood is just ridiculous. Whole album's ridiculous. Aaron Camaro's ridiculous. And now I'm as mad as Chris Sinzak.
Off the pump, off the thing, the blood that I'm pumping away. If I pump blood in the sunshine and you wear a leather box with azaleas and I pump more blood and it seeps through my skin, will you adore the river, the stream, the trickle, the tributary of my heart as I pump more blood and it seeps through my skin? Will you adore the river, the stream, the trickle, the tributary of my heart?
All right. Well, I'll make it up to you. I'll give you a fact about this album that you might not know. At the time when it came out, David Bowie loved this album.
I saw that quote.
Called it the best thing that Lou Reed had ever done, and was upset with fans because they weren't getting it. But he got it, and it was amazing to him.
So David Bowie did drugs at least into 2011.
Maybe.
I saw that quote, and I also saw that I don't know, but like the reviews on it were fucking hilarious. I mean, I was like, it's not even looked well, you know, this many, it's what, 12 years later, it's still not looked at well. That's which is what cracks me up, is like usually you can have an incubation time where people finally come around on something. No one likes this album even today.
It's funny, if you look at the plays on Spotify too. I know Aaron Camaro, Spotify is a service that you can pay for monthly, and basically everything behind you is just right there on your phone. you know, you go down to like Death Magnetic, and the biggest song is 105 million plays, and the most on any of these songs on Spotify is 650,000, and that's the first track. So I'm assuming just people are hitting play and turning it off. But I mean, For a Metallica release to only have, like, most of them have like 160 to like 200,000 plays is insane.
Well, the I think it's the song The View where James says I am the table, like, over and over right. again. And like I read that in one of the reviews I read, they said that a table is listed as James's occupation on Wikipedia because of that song.
Nice.
He is the table.
Use that in the wrestling videos too, when somebody gets thrown through a table, that there's a web a YouTube channel called Botchamania. Uh-huh. And when somebody goes through the table, they always have James on there going, I am the table, when the table
Another thing Aaron put on here, this is one thing I'm happy you put on the list, was Beyond Magnetic, which came out in 2011, which was like a 4-song EP that was basically leftovers from Death Magnetic. I didn't know about these songs until today. I'm a terrible Metallica fan because I hadn't listened to them till today. So I was pretty impressed with a lot of these songs. I don't know that any of them should have replaced a song on the record, but it's cool to hear extra material from the album. For best, I picked Rebel of Babylon. For worst, I picked Hell and Back. But I liked all four of them for the most part.
Actually, got this one on CD, and Josh CD is this like little silver thing. It's like a disc, and it comes in a jewel case, and you can hold it in your hand and read about the album and see things about it while you're listening to it. It's pretty cool.
That seems really clunky just for 4 songs.
It is a lot of work for 4 songs, but in this case, kind of worth it. I think 2 of the songs are good. 2 of them are okay. Best, I agree with Chris, Rebel of Babylon, pretty okay. Kick-ass. I could have seen that made it onto the album, would have been cool, instead of maybe the instrumental. Worst, I don't really get down with Just a Bullet Away. Kind of sounds like something that would have been on Load or Reload.
Has moments, though.
Yeah, I honestly had heard about this. Actually, heard about this a few days ago, and I listened today for the first time, and I agree with Chris. Rebel of Babylon, and then Hell and Back was my least favorite of the four. So,
all right, unanimous. Rebel of Babylon, worth checking out.
Another thing you put on here that I didn't even know about was in 2012 they covered Deep Purple and did When a Blind Man Cries. Was that for a particular project?
I think it was for a tribute to Deep Purple that came out. It had Glenn Hughes on it and a bunch of other. It was like a high profile tribute album that had some big name stars on it.
It's great. I was very impressed with it.
I did not listen to that one. Just because it's on the list, man, doesn't mean I have to listen to it. I found that that's a rule for the Decibel Geeks.
He's like, your show isn't sponsored by Knotfest, so I don't have to listen to all your shit.
Not listening to your list.
Fuck you and your Deep Purple cover. And then in 2014, they do two things. They put out Lords of Summer, which came out, and then Ronnie Rising, which was a kind of a mashup of Ronnie James Dio-related songs. Lords of Summer, I remember seeing a live clip of that at the time. They were busting that out at shows. I liked the live version of it. I went back and listened to the studio, and I was like, wow, this isn't very good. I'm kind of glad it got left off the last studio record. But the Ronnie Rising thing was cool to hear some of that stuff, especially the Rainbow material on that. Josh, did you bother to listen to either of these songs?
I listened to Lords of Summer. Was not a fan.
No.
Would not recommend.
I like it. I thought it was pretty cool. And I love Ronnie Rising.
Yeah, they do a good job covering Dio. And I'm glad James didn't try to hit the high notes. He just did it in his own style.
Yeah, pretty cool when Metallica jumps onto a tribute album. They always seem to come out with something awesome.
I didn't realize they covered so much material from other bands, which is cool. All right, well, then that leads us to the last studio album out as of now, Hardwired to Self-Destruct, which we'll talk about, of course, the new record soon. But Hardwired to Self-Destruct comes out November 18th, 2016, to pretty much rave reviews. And I think most people, for the most part, are happy with this record. I went back. I mean, I've listened to several songs off of this over the last year because I still go back to it a lot, especially the title track, Moth into Flame, Spit Out the Bone. Now That We're Dead, I think, is an underrated tune off this record. There's good stuff on it. I think it's definitely more solid than Death Magnetic, but also Metallica has a problem with self-editings. When you get to side two of this record, it does get a little weak. Compared to Load and Reload, this is amazing. It's a masterpiece. But if I have to pick a best, I'm going to pick Spit Out the Bone, which is funny because side two is weaker, but Spit Out the Bone's on side two. It closes the record. Worst easily for me, this was an easy pick for me, Man Unkind. This is them going back to that blues Talica thing with the open E riff. It sounds like something off Load or Reload, and I just don't like it. But I like several of the songs on this record.
I think this is the best thing they've come out with since And Justice for All. I think it's better than the Black Album.
I wouldn't say that.
I don't think there's a bad song on here. I think every single track on here is kick ass. Every single one of them's on the iPod. I couldn't leave any of them out. When this came out, man, I said, Metallica, man, they finally did it. They found the perfect spot in between hard rock and thrash metal. They landed it right here. They found the way to blend it perfectly. Best thing they've come out with in years. Everything is good on here. It's hard to pick a favorite because I really, really like them all. But I think the song I like the best is Now That We're Dead.
It's a good song.
It's just a killer song. It's got a lot of layers to it. I mean, they're all so good. They're all Spit Out the Bone is killer. Moth in the Flame. I mean, I just list the whole album. I love it. If I have to pick a worst, I like Man on Kind.
Really?
And I like this one too, but I'm going to call it my worst, least favorite on the album. Am I Savage? I like the least. But even at that, I think it's a pretty great song. So tough to pick a worst one on here. Best thing Metallica's done in a long time. If you're an old school Metallica fan that gave up on this band somewhere along the line and never ever gave them a chance again, you really owe it to yourself to listen to this album, because it's got the stuff on here that old school fans, Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, and Justice for All, there's songs on here that could fit on any one of those albums, and songs that sound like they could be from the eras of those albums. I think it's kick ass. I love it a lot. I listen to it all the time. Yeah. Best thing they've done in a long time, and it makes me excited for the near future with Metallica.
Yeah, I mean, this is an amazing record. When Hardwired, the song came out, you know, I was pumped about it. I think that's actually when we originally did our Metallica discography episode, which is, God, what is that now, 6 years ago? But yeah, so Hardwired came out, amazing. You know, Moth into Flame, Halo on Fire, just Atlas Rise, Now That You're, you know, Now That We're Dead. So many great songs. Chris is right. They do back half this one and just kind of going, you know, running into the mud. But the one thing I liked that they did, kind of hearkening back to the old days of like Damage Incorporated and Dyer's Eve and things like that, is they put a crusher at the end, and Spit Out the Bone is easily my favorite track on here. Really cool bass line in the middle of it, you know, kind of gives you know, Rob a little bit of a shine. And you know, it also kind of harkens back to Cliff, you know, that's the one thing that Robert kind of embodies, a little bit of Cliff, and they kind of let it, you know, show here with the kind of distorted bass and you know, just a great, great song. And I went with my least favorite is Am I Savage. That was the one that kind of that back half just lull. And yeah, Am I Savage is my least favorite on here, but man, Spit Out the Bone might be top 10 Metallica song of all time. You know, I think that, you know, Camaro is crazy for saying this is better than Black Album, but it's definitely a up there record in the catalog.
I disagree.
It's on par with it, though, I would say, because it has a little bit of the old school spirit compared to everything that came after Black Album. So I'll give it that. I don't see a point going into S&M 2, but let's talk about 72 Seasons, the record that's coming out in April. A guy that listens to our show that works with Sirius did mention to me that he heard several tracks off the next record and said that it sounds like Metallica going back to 1985. So hopefully he's telling me the truth. But I like what I've heard from Lux Eterna so far. What are you guys expecting on this next record?
The greatest Metallica album of all time.
I'm definitely not thinking it's going to be the greatest Metallica album of all time, but I think it's going to be great. I think, you know, Lux Eterna, you know, Sinzak blew me up, you know, that Monday morning or whatever that it came out. I walk outside and I listen to it for a little bit, you know, listen to it. I probably listened to that song 3 or 4 times in a row just to kind of get a feel for it, man. And they definitely, you know, I'll drop a name, but I recently interviewed Ricky Rackman, and I was talking to him about, you know, this is very much almost like Garage Inc. production, but like with like Kill 'Em All energy. It kind of just, you know, it runs the gambit of Metallica, and I think it's going to be, if the rest of the album is like this, I'm all in. Like, give me more.
Yeah, my good friend, your good friend, our good friend Metal Mike G sent it to me that morning. And I like stepped outside of work for a minute, and I was like, oh shit, I didn't even know Metallica was having a new album, new song come out or anything. Right. So I stop and I listen to it. I'm leaning on the car by the street, listening to it, just blown away.
Me too.
I was like, got done. And I was like, holy shit. I gotta listen to it again. And it's very rare that, you know, something like that comes out where I listen to it, I go, oh, that's cool, and then go on with life, to actually go, you know what, I'm gonna listen to that one more time because holy shit, that was good.
You know what's crazy too is it's like new single came out, you listen to that for a second, and then all of a sudden they go, boom, here's a tour with Pantera like right behind it, all the same day. And you're just like my childhood just basically erupted on my phone, you know, that morning. And obviously, I was talking to Sinzek earlier, got tickets to see the St. Louis show, and I'm tempted to go to the Chicago show just because, man, I want to see as many Pantera shows as possible. That's a whole other thing, but getting to see Metallica and Pantera together is, you know, my 15-year-old self just, you know, exploding inside. Yeah.
Well, when I saw the announcement of the tour, I texted you, and my first thought was, this is the It's for Josh Toomey tour, because it's Metallica and Pantera. I was like, this is like the ultimate. This would be like Kiss and Thin Lizzy and Alice Cooper touring together for me. I was super happy for you, and I'm excited for the record. You know, I mean, if you look at just the progression and going through having to listen to these albums in a row, I was like, man, Metallica's definitely, you know, they've definitely gotten their mojo back. If you go from the Black Album to now, I think things are bright. If you're a Metallica fan, you got to be pretty happy with what you're hearing so far. And I mean, Lux Eterna was great. I'm excited to hear the rest of the record. I never want to go back and listen to the Load, Reload, or Saint Anger albums ever again, especially Lulu. But it was interesting to go back and listen to. But yeah, not a lot of stuff's going to go onto my playlist. But it was interesting to go back and listen to and pick a best and worst of these songs. And Toomey, thanks for doing this.
You know, I'm always down to talk to you boys about some Metallica and all that good stuff. So yeah, I had fun kind of, you know, going down this this era of the band. Because obviously, like I said, you know, I'll hit Garage Inc. But if, you know, if I'm going to go back and listen to Metallica, it's going to be Black Album, Justice, and, you know, and beyond, but not this era, not at all.
It's kind of cool to know that once again in the world, Metallica is the biggest band. We must be living in good times.
Yeah, just as soon as that Metallica Tough Tour comes out, then, you know, then Aaron Camaro is going to be like, yes.
The Camaro Dream
Don't
Tour.
Don't forget the opening spots for Ugly Kid Joe and Local H on that tour. Make it a festival.
Oh, why? Hey, man, Local H, they won that contest open for Metallica.
I thought Metallica won the contest to open for Local H.
That up-and-coming local band, Local H.
Oh man,
those boys, they needed the exposure.
All right. Well, Toomey, do your plugs. Where can people find you? Where can people find Talk Toomey?
Anywhere you find your podcast, you can find Talk Toomey, or you can head over to notfest.com. The show's over there, or talktoomeypod.com. A direct link to the show there, and check out Notfest YouTube. A lot of the interviews and the now that I'm Chris Akins on the show. Our full episodes are on YouTube. So if you want to come look at our handsome faces, you can head over to the Notfest YouTube. That will now be every Saturday morning, 10 a.m. on the YouTube, but the free audio always comes out Thursdays on the podcast platforms of your choosing.
Well, this is a lot of fun today. Well, mostly.
Yeah, it would have been a lot more fun for us if we didn't have to listen to Lulu like somebody didn't, but okay.
A vow is a vow, and I cannot break it. But I vow to everybody, we will be back here right next week. We've got the end of the year coming up. We'll have some Geek Wire before the end. And coming up on the year-end episode, where Chris and I are going to let you know our top 10 favorite albums of 2022. What's the best album of 2022, Josh?
Oh, man. Off the top of my head, I think I'm going to go with the latest from Memphis May Fire. I think that was a great album. But the more I've listened to it, man, that Megadeth album is fucking amazing. It is kind of weird. I did listen to Lux Eterna, and then the new Megadeth came on after it. And I was like, that new Metallica is pretty good. But, man, Mustaine and the boys, they did a nice little job over there.
Yeah, they sure did. Well, you'll have to tune in next time to see what Chris and I pick for our year-end choices. But I guess we'll be back. Thanks, Josh, once again.
I'm sure Frontiers Records put it out, whatever it is.
You ain't lying.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you.
See ya.
That's funny.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.